This is The Next Turn, the home of conversations about skiing, ski racing, and sport. I'm your host, Martin Wilson, and thank you for joining us in the pursuit of better. To be better athletes, better coaches, better parents, and better fans. This week, a conversation with Alice Robinson. Welcome back to The Next Turn. It's great to have you here. I'm happy to have you here, and I'm also happy to have Jeff and Kara by my side. Hello, hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
I was worried about you guys there for a second. First off, thanks to all the people that have been liking and listening and rating and reviewing and doing all that you're doing to get the word out about The Next Turn. It's making a huge difference, and we really appreciate it. You know, we've been working really hard to bring you some good guests and some good content with some good conversations, and it's great to have you give us some good feedback and encourage us to keep that up. So thank you. We really appreciate that. And for those that haven't shared their feedback, we encourage you to do that at thenextturnpodcast.com/thoughts. But let's go. Here we go. Kara, how are you? What's going on? What say you?
It snowed, Martin. And I say I'm excited. I'm excited for the next snowfall because I don't think this one's going to last, but I'm ready. Got my snow tires on and I'm psyched.
Snow tires on, ready to go. Jeff, how are you doing, man?
Yeah, I was just going to say the same thing. We got some snow here this morning as well. It was fantastic to see. And I'm excited about another weekend of racing. We got two races at Levy coming up this weekend. And then certainly you're excited about the Killington World Cup in 2 weeks.
It's a little sooner than 2 weeks. It feels like it's next week now because we're boots on the ground getting the surface ready starting a couple of days from now. But anyways, this week, Alice Robinson, pretty fired up to have her here. Let's get right to it. Jeff, why don't you give us some hard facts on Alice Robinson?
For sure. Alice Robinson, born December 1st, 2001 in Sydney, Australia, moved to Queenstown, New Zealand at the age of 4, started ski racing at the age of 8. She won the Whistler Cup as a U14, and at 15 years of age, in her first year of FIST, won a NORAM at Panorama, made her World Cup debut in 2018, and raced at the Pyeongchang Olympics. 2019 World Junior Champion in GS, her first World Cup podium at the World Cup Finals in Andorra. She has 3 World Cup GS wins, 2 seconds, and 11 top 10s.
Okay, that's the real deal, huh, Kara? That is the hard facts. Thank you for that, Jeff. Kara, what's the story here? What should we be listening for?
I've listened to this interview, and you want to know what to listen for, guys? Listen for it all. Well, you know, because you guys were both there. How many other Kiwi skiers can you name off the top of your head? Growing up in New Zealand sort of makes Alice a bit of an outlier, and she didn't even come from a ski racing family. So you want to talk about natural talent and athletic ability? Alice has got it in spades. Her first World Cup win was also New Zealand's first World Cup win medal in 17 years, and she was 17 years old. I love listening to her speak. Her pathway to the podium is beyond unique and unlike anything we've heard yet on The Next Turn.
Yeah, I think there's some really cool stuff there. And it's really exciting to talk about how she got there, how she's planning for her future. So I hope you all enjoy this conversation. Here we go. Here's Alice Robinson on The Next Turn. Right now, you're in Copper Mountain, correct?
Yes. Yeah, I'm in Copper.
How long have you been there?
I think it's been about a week now. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you've got this 2 week block at Copper. One of the things we wanted to talk to you is a little bit about your season plan and how you are sort of got this really strong GS base, but it seems like you're venturing out more and more into speed.
Yeah.
And I'd love to understand a little bit of your thinking there and how you're going to go about that and what's the strategy to roll you out in speed.
So obviously through my whole career, my biggest thing has always been GS, and kind of being from New Zealand, like it was always a big focus for me to get like kind of really good at one discipline and then eventually kind of break out, just because, you know, with money and funding and stuff like that, I kind of had to put a lot of my focus into GS just to kind of make it in like one discipline and then eventually kind of branch out rather than kind of, you know, being from like other countries where they can kind of, you know, go up with, you know, trying to bring 3 disciplines up. For me, my goal was always to get really good at GS first and then bring in other disciplines. And this year my goal really is to kind of crack the top kind of 20, top 15 in Super G, or even better. I mean, I'm not really sure, you know, it's kind of hard, like for me, like speed, you know, it's a different beast. It's something I didn't really grow up a lot doing, kind of being from New Zealand. It's very kind of different to the skiing I grew up doing. I grew up at Coronet Peak, where it's, you know, steep and icy, and there's not a lot of kind of gliding flat sections on the mountains. So it's pretty different. But I never liked slalom. I'm not a big slalom fan. I just never wanted to do that. I always wanted to go down the kind of speed route, and kind of started bringing in more Super G last year. And it was definitely, it's a bit, lot more of a process. And for me, you got to have a lot more patience, I think, when you're kind of getting into speed compared to GS, and kind of couldn't really figure it out for the first part of the season. You know, had some success in Super G, and then I finished last year with the top 10 on the World Cup in Super G, which was like a big goal of mine. So I was super happy with that. So that's kind of what I'm trying to build on this year. And my goal is to do all the Super G's this year and eventually kind of maybe even downhill. But like I said, I've spent probably 2 days on downhill skis in my life. So it's kind of also a pretty kind of new thing for me. But yeah, I'm trying to kind of crack that Super G kind of bubble. But it's also a little bit difficult this year with COVID, because I actually don't have any downhill fist points, because I've never raced downhill. And the fist rule is you can't do in any training runs or any downhill World Cup races unless you have under 80 points. So I can't even, you know, do the downhill trainings on the hills kind of before the Super G. So it's pretty tough for me trying to kind of crack into the Super G thing at the moment, because I'm pretty much going onto these Super G hills completely blind, never skied them before. And, you know, all the other girls have kind of been on the hill for 4 days doing downhill trainings and downhill races, and I'm kind of just jumping in the Super G at the end completely blind to the hill. So it's kind of poses a bit of a challenge. So that's something I'm trying to kind of get on with at the moment.
That's something you don't really think about, as you think of that evolution into speed. That's a pain in the ass, huh? That you just can't get on the hill. And I love the fact that you were sort of strategic about the GS, and you're being strategic about it going into speed now. But what are you really good at in GS that's translating, that you think is going to translate well into Super G and eventually speed or downhill, sorry? And what is it that you think you need to really figure out, if you could be specific with that?
This is the funny thing. It's what me and my coaches are joking about, is I don't think anything that makes me a really good GS skier, the things that I'm known for in GS, I don't think they correlate to making me a good speed skier at all. Because, you know, in GS, you know, I'm kind of known for my super aggressive, you know, hard pressure, short arcs and stuff like that. And in speed, I kind of figured out pretty early that, you know, that big drop and that really aggressive arcing, it's not necessarily fast in Super G at all, or speed, because, you know, it's more about that subtlety and kind of all that. And I think that's kind of something that I've been trying to figure out with my coaches. It's like, okay, you know, some of the things that make you really fast in GS, they're not, you know, necessarily make you fast in speed. So that's something I'm trying to figure out at the moment. And I think, you know, I think I've got a pretty solid position on my skis. So I think, you know, basic, you know, stability and basic technique and stuff like that always correlates across the disciplines, you know, just having a good position on your skis. And I feel like I've got a pretty good position on my skis. So that's something that I think helps me in the speed. And, you know, on the more technical, difficult tracks, when it starts turning a bit more, I think that's where I kind of excel in Super G and have, you know, good fast sections. But for me, the biggest thing is kind of figuring out aerodynamics, my tuck on flats, and, you know, learning how to be subtle. I think that's something that's I've had to work hard to try and figure out, and I'm still trying to figure it out. I'm, you know, still a long way off the best in the world when it comes to aerodynamics and knowing how to be gliding and, you know, work those, you know, more subtleties. I think that's something, and, you know, have more touch is something I'm trying to work on, because I think I lack a bit of that. But like I said, kind of growing up in New Zealand, that's not what we grew up kind of learning how to do, you know, compared to some other athletes who grew up on these big mountains where, you know, gliding and all that was a big part of what they did in their youth. You know, I didn't do that at all. So it's kind of a new foreign concept to me.
I like that. When you're going out there and you're learning the speed events, I saw a couple of days ago, Lindsey Vonn was out there. What are those conversations like, picking up information from how quickly are you absorbing information from whom? And is that how you work?
Yeah, I would say I really like learning from others. And I think, you know, growing up in New Zealand, I didn't have any mentors or kind of other athletes that were guiding me at all. I kind of was trying to figure it out by myself, because there were no other athletes, you know, on the World Cup circuit when I was growing up in New Zealand. So there wasn't really anyone that I could ask kind of questions about the World Cup or just about skiing in general who were kind of current athletes. You know, I had Claudia Riegel has always been great with me, who, you know, used to race for New Zealand, and she's been a bit of a mentor, but I didn't really have any other athletes kind of at the time that were racing. So I kind of always, you know, my coaches were big helps when it came to, you know, asking a lot of questions and stuff like that, because they'd worked with, you know, a lot of experienced athletes. So for me, like having Lindsay up there the other day was, you know, awesome that I could like directly ask, you know, like the best, she was, you know, the best in the world, you know, direct questions about speed. It was really interesting and I think helps a lot.
Well, can you humor me and say, like, when you talk about these questions, give me one tidbit. Like, what do you want to know? Like, you got Lindsay Vonn for 30 seconds. What are you trying to get? What's the first question you asked?
What did I ask her? I'm trying to think. Oh, I asked her like what her pre-race kind of pump up songs were.
That's valid.
But then I was just, you know, asking her for just some kind of key tips about the speed side.
That's awesome. Just going to jump in here. You mentioned your pathway, and Jeff and I were pretty curious about that. Jeff?
Yeah, thanks, Martin. So very different pathway from a lot of other athletes. You mentioned you're from New Zealand, but you were actually born in Australia and didn't move to New Zealand until you were four. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So was the move to New Zealand because your parents were skiers, or did that have anything to do with it? And then could you talk about your early days in New Zealand and what skiing was like as a young athlete?
Yeah, so grew up, it was born in Sydney, so kind of not really in the ski scene at all. And we moved to Queenstown when I was four, and no, it wasn't anything to do with skiing at all. My parents, you know, were not big skiers. My mum, she grew up on a farm in like, you know, Western New South Wales in Australia. So she, you know, didn't have anything to do with snow. And my dad is from Brisbane, where it's, you know, pretty much a tropical city, like average temperatures, like 20 degrees Celsius. So neither of them were big skiers like at all. But, you know, occasionally when they were together, they'd go on holidays to Queenstown because it was like a 3-hour flight from Sydney to Queenstown for like just, you know, fun kind of ski holidays. And then that's the first time I skied, was when we went on like a family holiday from Sydney to Queenstown when I was three. And then we ended up moving to Queenstown when I was four, and no, nothing to do with skiing. It was more that my parents were just kind of sick of the big city life in Australia and wanted to kind of move to Queenstown just because they loved the area. And it was, you know, kind of like a cool small town, but, you know, a lot to do, a lot of outdoors, a lot of great like things to do for kids. So we moved there when I was four, and yeah, had nothing to do with skiing at all. Just kind of just wanted a change of scenery from Sydney. And then like kind of with skiing, they just kind of put us in like, you know, ski schools and holiday programs and stuff just like on the weekends occasionally, because like they just wanted us to be like decent skiers, but like they didn't expect us to like, you know, actually do it as a sport. And then I remember when I was eight, I said to them that I wanted to do the ski racing program because I'd done a couple kind of 2-week programs with the race team, and they were like, okay, yeah, sure, why not? So they just kind of went into it and had no idea what they were getting themselves into, I don't think.
So then the pathway, I take it, went fairly quickly from there. All of a sudden you're having success at Whistler Cup and then the move to Sugar Bowl, right? And so can you just talk us through how that progression happened?
Yeah, so the way it kind of worked for me was I went with like the local Queenstown Alpine ski team in New Zealand and trained with them in the winter. And then I think we went to Tahoe for the first time when I was like 9 or 10, just kind of like on a family holiday, but did like a little bit of race training, just kind of popped into the local ski club. And then I guess I just, yeah, each year I just got more and more into it. And I think the second year that I started racing, I started winning like all the kind of national kids stuff in New Zealand. And then, you know, went over to the US and was racing there. And then I kind of started winning some of the races over in the US. So my parents were kind of like, oh, maybe she's got like, can do, like, she's pretty good, so we'll keep low, you know, we'll support her and stuff. And then eventually went to Sugar Bowl when I was first year U14 or something. I went and joined Sugar Bowl just because it was a pretty good setup for like someone from New Zealand, you know. It was like one flight from New Zealand to San Francisco and then could easily get to Tahoe. It was pretty easy and, you know, sunny and same language compared to, you know, going to Europe and stuff like that. And it just kind of worked out, and I ended up being at Sugar Bowl for like 4 years and absolutely loved it. It was great. Had some really great coaches and great friends from there. And it was, you know, kind of perfect training for me at the time.
That's great. You've obviously had success along the way, sort of every step, including rolling onto the World Cup and finding some pretty early success. How do you keep that in perspective that holy cow, this was some success right away. This has got to be what it's like all the time. to realize it's not like that all the time, and how hard it is to stay at that level and get better. Can you talk a little bit about when your mentality in that respect, and then what you're doing to maintain it?
Yeah, I think definitely it can be tough, especially when you're a youngster and you kind of burst on and start doing quite well. It can be hard to kind of have that, you know, when everyone else has, you know, been working so hard for so long to kind of get to that thing, and you kind of have it at like quite instantaneously. It can be hard to kind of get perspective and realize that it doesn't just, you know, like, you know, it doesn't just happen. You need to keep working hard to stay at that level. And I think, you know, my first kind of year that I won Solden, and then, you know, Kranz-Gora, I think, and then kind of being disrupted by COVID, it was kind of a tough kind of wake up call for me. Well, not a wake up call, but it was hard kind of for me to keep that progression, you know, even going into last year, just because I kind of had the success and then I basically didn't ski for like 6 months because of COVID. It kind of threw a spanner in my progress and really kind of changed how I like work and everything like that. And I think last year was definitely a big struggle for me, kind of, you know, missing like most of the prep period and then trying to kind of get onto the World Cup. And I think when you don't, sometimes when you, it made me realize, you know, you can't just expect results, because I didn't have a proper preseason and everything with COVID, you know, you have to keep, it's hard for everything just to line up if it doesn't line up. And I think that taught me that you, you know, still need to work really hard and you still need to have, you know, all the preparations as best you can if you want to be competing at that level. And that's something that I missed last year. And it was kind of why I was struggling so much at the start, and then got to the end of the season and had success again. And it kind of showed me that, you know, you need to keep that process and you need to keep working hard to get to that level. And I think that's something, you know, that can be hard, is when you kind of just, you can never expect success just to happen. You know, you'd have to work really hard for it, and you can never expect that it's going to come easy, because it never does. And everyone else that you're competing with is working just as hard as you are, or even harder. Or so that's kind of what you need to keep telling yourself, is that someone's always trying to work harder than you, and it's not just going to happen like that. You got to keep going.
Are you someone, when you've had those successes with your team, the three wins, and I think there's a lot more successes than just the wins, are you someone that, with your group, lots of high fives, hooting and hollering, or do those successes sort of come and go quietly?
I think we celebrate the successes for sure. You know, you never know if you win a race, whether it's like the last race you're ever going to win. So, you know, you've got to kind of enjoy the moment. And I think all our team, you know, if it goes well and we feel like we've all put in a lot of work, and I think it's definitely cause for celebration. But I think, you know, at the same time, you kind of got to look at the successes and, you know, enjoy the moment and enjoy it, but then also think about what's next at the same time. So I think that's kind of, you got to find a balance between enjoying it, but also kind of thinking about what's happening next and keep working.
That's awesome. You mentioned your team. It's a little unorthodox. Your team is, it's New Zealand, but really it's international ski racing, and you are led or coached by Jeff Fergus, who, by the way, is my old roommate way back when. So say hello to Ferg.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we lived together in Tahoe way back when, and we worked at Heavenwood way back when. But, and we're old friends. He introduced me to my first wife, but not my second one. So that's
nice.
So that's
go Ferg.
Yeah, go Ferg. But anyways, your team is a little bit unconventional, under the umbrella of New Zealand, but it really is an international ski team, led by, mm-hmm. by Jeff Fergus and Chris Knight. Can you talk about, like, have you just created your own little national team? Is that essentially what it is? Do you feel like you're a series of rogue nations? How does it work, and how does that pod work into the World Cup?
Yeah, so I think we've got a pretty good little setup, because, you know, with New Zealand, it's not like, you know, the US or the Austrians, where they've got this ginormous kind of federation behind them that are, you know, kind of doing everything for them. You know, with the Alpine stuff from New Zealand, we don't really have a national team. So it's all kind of private. So that's kind of how I did it. And I started working with Chris and Jeff when they just started their academy back when I was 16, I think, well, just about 17. So I kind of joined it because I didn't, you know, as a 17-year-old, I didn't really want to just have, you know, be traveling with me and a coach around for the whole time. Like, I wanted to kind of, and some of my friends were on the team as well. So I was like, oh, this could be nice, you know, kind of living with some other girls, not having to spend, you know, all the time away by myself, because I think that's, you know, not a very healthy kind of way for a 17-year-old to grow up, is just, you know, traveling around with coaches and not seeing any other people the same age as them and stuff. So I joined with them, just, you know, gotten, you know, more and more girls kind of joining throughout the years. And it's worked quite well, because Like in the GS races, it's kind of just me racing. So we just kind of had me and Jeff and Chris, and, you know, I served at the GS races. And then at the speed races, the other girls have another coach with them as well. So then we all kind of work together on the speed side, because it's pretty tough to be like a one-man show on the speed side, I think. But on the GS side, it's easy, and it works really well, because I can train with those girls sometimes if I want to, especially when we're training speed. But then if I want to do a week block, you know, just me and the coaches, then we'll go do that and just work with me. So it kind of works quite well, just kind of in and out with the other girls. But, you know, the speed races, we're all together and can work together, which I think works well.
Mm-hmm. Now, again, you're in copper. I have to think that there's a lot of cooperation with the other, like to be training in copper, you got to get the invite from the US ski team. I got to think that Ferg being the former coaches, that helps get the invite a little bit there. How much do you work with other national teams? I know you're based out of Italy a lot. Do you work a lot with them, or do you have teams you work with and don't, or how does that work?
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, just kind of depends where we are at the time. I mean, there's not like one team that we're constantly working with. Like, we don't have like a corporation or anything like that. But we end up training with the Italians quite a lot, just because we're based in Italy. So yeah, sometimes they let us kind of join them for some speed training, or, you know, if we're just training GS somewhere, sometimes we'll join in with them. But it's not kind of like a constant thing. It's just kind of whoever's kind of around. And it's the same, like, you know, if we're in like a certain place and other teams are there, we'll just join with the other teams. But it's not really like a structured kind of partnership or anything. It's just kind of how it works is, like, if people are around, then they'll join and, you know, train together. But it's not like a structured thing or anything like that.
I got to go back. I'm fascinated by your pathway. Are you a one sport athlete, or when you grew up, did you play, or were there several sports that you played when you were a young athlete?
Yeah, absolutely. I played a lot of sports growing up. I kind of started when I was younger. Yeah, I loved sports just in general. I played, what did I do? I did a lot of like field hockey when I was younger. So field hockey, I played football, soccer, like touch rugby, netball. I loved netball. I actually used to horse ride at quite a high level. So I did, you know, probably like six sports growing up. And then when I didn't actually stop playing. I played netball for my like school up until I was 17. And then I decided to stop kind of when I was starting to get on the World Cup with skiing. But I absolutely loved playing heaps of different sports. I think, you know, they teach you a lot of different things. And I loved being a part of a team as well and playing team sports and, you know, socializing with other people. And I think it was, you know, great cross training for skiing, because go and play netball and you're doing so much running and so much jumping and stuff like that. It's better than, you know, being kind of a child. I feel like a lot of child athletes, they're kind of forced into one sport growing up, and I don't feel like it's very healthy, because I think, you know, different sports, you know, you get fit playing different sports, your body builds different muscles, and I don't think it's healthy for a kid who's like 15 to just be in the gym trying to do stuff. I feel like it's way better that they're out and about with their mates playing other sports and, you know, learning about different stuff. And I absolutely loved it. So I definitely was a multi kind of athlete.
Amen.
That is music to our ears. Hey, Martin.
Yeah.
What is it about, what was it about skiing that set that apart from all your other endeavors? Like, what do you love most about skiing?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. And I feel like this is something that happens a lot with, you know, kids just skiing in New Zealand, is that they'll be good at skiing, but the pathway is so weird and so difficult that they'll stop skiing and end up playing rugby or end up playing netball or something like that, because it's just so much easier to go down that pathway. But for me, I don't know, I just like nothing felt as big of a deal to me as skiing. Like, skiing always just felt like that's what I was supposed to be doing, and everything else that I was doing was kind of just filling the holes. I don't know, skiing was just, I guess it's just so such a unique kind of sport, and it's so, you know, there's so many different aspects, and it's so kind of cool. Like, you know, you're traveling around, you're seeing all these different places, you're throwing yourself down a mountain, and none of the other sports, even though I loved them and I loved taking part, nothing else kind of was, you know, the same feeling that I got skiing. And I think also I feel like I was probably the best at skiing, so that's just something I felt like I was just better at skiing than I was at all the other sports. So just went down that road. But I don't want to be there, like, you know, too like focused and too in my own head. I don't like that. So I try and keep it pretty chilled. And my pre-race song, I listened to like a drum and bass mix that some DJ made in New Zealand. That's kind of my go-to. It's pretty hectic, but it gets me pretty fired up.
I like that. How on, this, on those days that you've had success, and I guess the same question for the days that they haven't gone well, how are, like, what part of the day do you know is going to be a good day, or do you? Like, are there certain days where you're just like, all right, the vibe's good, the music's good, today's the day, and certain days you just, uh-oh.
Yeah, definitely. There's been some days where it just has felt, you know, really off, and I just haven't felt confident. I've felt, you know, I think there's a time where you've got to feel, be in the start gate, and you just can tell yourself, okay, you've got this, like, you've got it, you feel confident, and you know what you're going to do. And there's some days where I just, you know, feel lost, and I don't, like, I feel like I've kind of forgotten how, like, what my legs are supposed to do. And I've had that a few times where I just haven't felt confident and it just hasn't gone well. And then there's days where, you know, everything clicks and it's a good day, and I just feel so relaxed because I feel like I know exactly what I have to do and I don't have to think about it too much. It's just instinctual. And I think those are kind of what the feelings I'm trying to find, is that I've been through it so much and I know exactly what I'm doing that I don't have to stress about it. But I think the days where you're constantly questioning, oh God, like, what do I have to do here? What do I have to do there? That's when it's a mess.
Have those situations ever been like the other way around, that you wake up and you're feeling really confident and the day goes to shit? Or there's days that you wake up and you're not feeling confident, and by the end of the day, you're like, holy cow, it turned out well. Or are those predictors always predicting?
I feel like you can have a feeling like when you wake up in the morning, like, especially, you know, if you wake up and you're like, oh, my legs feel like slightly fatigued today, or my legs don't feel a little bit heavy, or you can kind of wake up, like, this sounds a bit like cheesy, but, like, you can wake up and you just feel like you can bounce around because your legs feel so good. So I think kind of little things like that you can tell in the morning. But I kind of always have a feeling, you know, after warm up, like, I'll go through my warm up and I'll run the warm up course. And if, you know, if that feels good, then I feel good. But if that feels off, then I'm like, start kind of questioning stuff. And I hate that. Or if you haven't, you know, if, like, in Kranjski Gora last year, when I was kind of in a pretty big rut and I got there and I just felt, you know, I had like 3 DNFs, I think, in a row. And then I got there and the slope was sheet ice. I'd won the year before, so I kind of felt like a bit of pressure that, like, I should be able to ski this slope well, and I absolutely just felt so off that whole weekend. And those are kind of the things I'm trying not to find. But like I said, for me, like, the kind of the race prior kind of has an effect on how I feel mentally, and I try and ignore it, but it's kind of, sometimes it's hard to ignore. Like, if you had a crash, like, you know, 3 crashes the weekend before, like, that's always going to play into my mind, is like, shit, like, I really need to get to the finish today. Like, I really need to finish. And if I've got that in my head, then it's a mess, because you've got this other thing in your head, like, oh, come on, like, just make it down. And then for me, that's always a mess, because my fastest skiing is always when it's on the edge. And if I'm thinking, you know, get to the bottom or just have a solid run, then it's never going to be fast.
You mentioned a few times the DNF streaks. What's the strategy to find more consistency or fix it? Is it inspecting courses and looking at tracks a little differently? Like, this is a red light section, I just got to be smart here. This is a go section, I got to be smart here. Is that the strategy? Or is it to be able to compete at maybe not 110%, but maybe just at 99%, and that be good enough?
I think it's probably more like just knowing where you have to back off. And I think a lot of times for me, like, when I've DNF'd, it's just because I haven't been in the right place. Like, you know, there's the occasional DNF where you're skiing really well, everything's going well, and you just, you know, hit a snow stake or something happens and you come out, like, it's just inevitable. Like, it's always going to happen. That's just part of the sport. But if it's consistently, like, last year, like, 3 DNFs, then it's, you know, there's something mentally not quite right. And I think for me last year when I was crashing, it was more of a mental thing, just not feeling 100% and having all these questions kind of in the back of your head that you're trying to ignore. And then your body just doesn't feel ready and you just make stupid errors that you wouldn't normally make. And I think that's what I was doing last year. And sometimes when you're thinking, like, if you're doing anything and you're thinking, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that, then you're going to do it. So I think that's kind of what I had to learn.
I'd love to hear what you say here, but I bet you every young athlete would like to hear what you say too. What's the process to turn it around? Like, when you've had 3 weeks of shit and DNFs and no vibe, what's the, like, do you just wait and all of a sudden it changes? Or I got to think that you're making steps and making choices to turn it around. What are those steps and choices?
Yeah, well, definitely last year that was a process that I went through, and it kind of, I mean, I'd love to say that, you know, you can have 3 DNFs and be skiing terribly and then, you know, one day, the next day you can be winning, but that's not really how it normally works for me. I mean, last year I kind of had, you know, like, December and January were kind of messy for me, like, just, you know, DNFs and things like that. And then DNFs are not very good results, but then I just, you know, slowly, like race by race, I was just building back my confidence. And, you know, it can be that you have one like awesome training session where it just stuff starts to click. And that's kind of what happened with me, is just did like a 3-day really intense training block and just figured, you know, certain things out, and started feeling really confident in my skiing again. And then you kind of can try and put that into the race. And it's even if you're, you know, in your race and maybe the end result isn't the first place, but you start having some fast sections, and that's kind of what I was getting. So I kind of went from that, and then, you know, had a few solid results at races, and then, you know, fourth at World Champs, and then second at the World Cup, and then a World Cup win. It was kind of just a process to build back the confidence and build back, you know, the stepping blocks that it takes to be the peak performance.
You talk about the peak performance. Can you look ahead to this season? You got Killington coming next week. Then the season really rolls out in earnest. It's an Olympic year. Can you talk about sort of your goal setting process for this year and beyond, and maybe highlight what are your measures of success this year? Like, if we're sitting here talking in the end of March, what's the criteria to have a good year or not?
Yeah. So for me this year, obviously a big focus is the Olympics, just because, you know, being from New Zealand, like no one really knows like what the World Cup is in New Zealand. Like no one looks at that, even though it's our biggest focus. So a big goal for me this year is the Olympics, and, you know, getting like a medal would be amazing. To get a medal at the Olympics would be, is like the biggest goal of mine. But then at the same time, you don't want to kind of put your whole kind of season focused on this one race. So I'm just trying to, you know, get really top results at the World Cup. And, you know, I want to be kind of consistently on the podium in GS, and I feel like I'm good enough to do it. But I just, you know, it's a process, and it's about kind of learning how I can do that. So my goal just every race is to be able to just put down the best performance that I can. And then also, you know, looking at the speed side, trying to kind of crack into that. But my goal is still, you know, priority still GS and wanting top results on the World Cup, and then kind of focusing to be peaking at the Olympics, which is kind of nice for me at the same time, because it doesn't take away from the World Cup, but it kind of gives me something bigger to look at every race. That, like, you know, the World Cup's there, but, you know, I'm always kind of thinking about the Olympics. So it's kind of nice that we've got like one bigger event that you can focus on.
Where does a GS Crystal Globe fit into your goals?
I mean, like, I would love to win the GS Crystal Globe, but I'm not trying to think about that, just because I want to just focus on like every race. I mean, I'd love to win the globe. It's obviously like a big goal of anyone, but sometimes I feel like the way I ski, like I'm still don't know if I'm consistent enough to be kind of there to win the globe, because I'm just, you know, I just want to win like every race. And if that means like winning a race and then crashing, that's kind of how it goes sometimes. So my kind of focus is more just on each individual race, but obviously I would love to win the globe. Like, who wouldn't?
Yeah, right. How far are you, like, you said you don't think you're quite there yet. How far away in your mind are you from that level of success? Well, are you close? You feel it? Do you believe it?
I've seen it. Like, I've, you know, I've won World Cup races before. I guess it's just trying to figure out what process I need to go through to be able to be consistent every weekend. And I'm not really sure exactly where I'm at just yet with that, but I'm, you know, just trying to work, but, you know, just winning. I just want to, you know, be competing at every race as best as I can and see where that puts me. So I mean, obviously the globe is a big goal, but I kind of I'm more focused on the Olympics than the globe, but I would still, you know, love to win a globe.
take either.
Yeah. It wouldn't be too bad.
As you become more and more successful, and being young and being successful, and being from New Zealand and being successful, you're garnering a ton of media attention. How do you handle that aspect and the social media aspect, and guys like me chirping in your ear, and you having to talk about the Olympics 50 times a week and all this stuff? Do you have strategies to deal with that, or is it just Enrique say no? what goes into that thinking for you?
Yeah, like with the media, it's been a little bit more hectic this year, I think, just with the Olympics coming up, and especially from New Zealand, because I'm not really used to getting heaps of media attention in New Zealand. Like, I'm kind of used to it, you know, over in Europe and things like that. But in New Zealand, I'm not really used to people in New Zealand really caring like what I'm up to, which is kind of nice. But and then all of a sudden with the Olympics, people start watching a bit more. So it's a bit more of that added pressure. But I guess, you know, I actually really enjoy doing stuff like this and chatting to people. And, you know, I like doing interviews and talking about, you know, speaking about stuff. So that's kind of, I don't find it really a chore at all. And with kind of managing the different interviews, you know, I just get Enrique to kind of manage all that for me. And if she thinks something's a good option, then I trust her and I try and do everything that, like, all the interviews that I can. And I enjoy it. So it's not a big issue for me.
Perfect. Well, I'm glad we snuck by the keeper's gate. That was a big deal.
we are pretty big deals, Martin. Like, yeah, our millions of fans.
Yeah, big millions of fans. We're learning. I won't keep you much longer here, Alice. I'd like to ask people that we have on, how do we know? Like, it's really tough for us to follow this sport, especially in North America. We don't get a ton of access to you. Like, we see bits on social media if we want, and then we see 2 minutes of you on the weekend if everything goes well. Aside from just the results, how do we know that you're feeling good and you're happy and you're healthy and you're pushing without seeing the results? What are the cues as fans? I think it's really tough to follow World Cup athletes. And like you said, you can go on a streak of a couple DNFs and then next week it's like all of a sudden you've turned it around. And what are the cues, what are the signals as fans that we should be looking for? Is it just a fist pump every so often? Is it you're not storming out of the finish? Is it that you're still you're still skiing aggressive? What are the cues?
I would say if I'm smiling or not, it's probably a good one. I think if you're watching me and I look like I'm pushing it, then, you know, I'm probably feeling quite good on my skis. Without, you know, if you're watching me and you look like I'm hesitant, then it probably isn't feeling too good on my skis. Mm-hmm. If I get to the finish and I've got a little smile on my face, then it's probably a good thing. If I get to the finish and I'm shaking my head, then, you know, it's probably not a good one. I think, yeah, if I just look like I'm enjoying myself and I'm kind of joking around, then I'm probably feeling pretty good. If I'm looking there like sulky and a bit serious, then I'm probably overthinking and not feeling 100% confident in what I'm doing.
That's fair. And maybe one last question here. Are there certain places, stops on the World Cup, that make you smile more often, or it's easier to smile at, or the vibe is great, or the surrounding is great? Like, again, you're going to be in Killington next week. I got to think that's kind of a cool venue. We're going to have the crowds back and it's right there. Are there other big key events that you see that you just like being at and vibing at?
I would say Killington's probably quite cool. I mean, I've only been there once, and last time I was there, I crashed.
I remember, you didn't
not
go where.
Not the greatest track record, but yeah. But that's all right. I mean, I'm trying to think. So I like racing in Italy a lot. Where else is good? I don't know. There's like, I quite like just racing, like being at the speed races, because I'm not like as much of like, you know, I'm not trying to kind of like, I'm not the favorite to win. So I kind of like being like the little underdog, seeing how far I can push it. I quite like the vibes of those races, just because it's kind of like a bit more of a break for me racing speed compared to GS, because I can kind of relax a bit more and just have like fun with it. So I quite enjoy being at the speed venues.
I have a hard time believing you have a hard time relaxing.
You find it hard?
Yeah, I find it hard to believe that you have a hard time relaxing.
Why?
I don't know. You just seem like you're pretty chill and roll with it. Like, that's awesome. Am I wrong with that?
No, for sure. I think I'm probably more chilled than like a lot of the other athletes, but you know, there's still times where if, you know, I'm under Hubert, I still have, you know, expectations and I still get nervous and stuff like that. So if you've got expectations at, you know, GS races, I try and always, you know, keep it fun and keep it, just roll with it. But, you know, you can still have those expectations and the pressures. So for me, I can kind of just relax even more and just have fun at the speed races, because I'm just kind of seeing how much I could punch in, and I'm not, you know, expected to win. So it's kind of nice to race those races. But at the same time, GS is fun because, you know, if you are expected to win, then maybe you can. So just kind of got to go for it.
Welcome back. A special thanks to Alice Robinson for that wonderful conversation. We hope that you all enjoyed it as well. It is now time for Thoughts of the Day. Before we get going, I want to encourage you all to share your thoughts of the day with us at thenextturnpodcast.com/thoughts and tell us what you think about these guests, who you think we should be talking to next, or what some of the themes are that you're hearing. So please, again, reach out, let us know what you're thinking. But now it's time for our thoughts. Jeff, you were on that call. That was a pretty cool conversation. What you thinking? What are your thoughts of the day?
Yeah, Martin, that was so fun to talk to her. She's such a great young talent and a super human being. shout out to her parents. They did a fantastic job raising this young woman. And she's such a good role model for those young athletes out there today. You know, I really want to talk about how grounded she is and how much she loves skiing and the feeling of ski racing. And that's so important. We talk about it all the time. And I just want our listeners, get your athletes to listen to this interview and see how cool Alice Robinson is and how much of a special young talent she is, and bottle her up and take that out on the hill with you every day.
I love that. That's great, Jeff. Thanks for that. Kara, what are you thinking? What are your thoughts of the day?
Well, guys, I think of all the athletes we've interviewed on the Next Turn, Alice Robinson has perhaps the most unique athlete pathway. And it just goes to show that many paths can lead to greatness. And she continues to take a unique path, training with her team at International Ski Racing. So for a parent like me, it's comforting to hear that there isn't one right way to do it. But one thing that every athlete needs is grit, hard work, and talent. And oh my God, Alice Robinson has so much talent.
I love that, Kara. I think you're spot on. For me, my thoughts of the day, you know, I think it's really interesting to talk to a young athlete, a young woman near the top of the sport already. She's 19. She's at the top of the sport. But there's so much more obvious potential in the near future for her. Like so much and so soon and probably for a while, she's going to keep getting better. She's got some obvious strengths that she builds off. Her physical strength is clearly one. Her ability to transfer that strength and bend the shit out of the ski on demand at will and ski like that is incredible, incredibly useful going forward. The fact that she's a multi-sport athlete, like in her youth, from skiing to rugby to field hockey to netball, which is harder than you think. It's like basketball without the backboard. But like Kara said, you know, she's got that classic New Zealand grit. But for me, the fact that she's incredibly normal and happy and balanced seems to, and to have some really, really good parents and really good friends and really good roots, I think that might be the best indicator of how successful she's going to be in the next few years of getting better and maintaining what she's building. You know, Jeff, Kara, we've talked to a lot of really cool athletes, and we've had the privilege to have some really cool conversations in the last few weeks. Men, women, rookies, veterans, North Americans, Europeans, and now a Kiwi. And we'll be sharing those conversations over the next few weeks with everybody. But I'll say this, as these athletes all prepare to perform at a really high level on a regular basis, there's themes developing in what they're talking about and what they're saying, what they prioritize, how they spend their energy, who they surround themselves with, how they treat themselves and others. It seems to be those things need to be taken care of first and create that environment before them to really try to get better and have that freedom to get better and relax and perform. Those are my thoughts. It'll be interesting to see, you know, what other people think there, but there's a theme developing with these conversations. It's really interesting, and it may not be where I thought we were headed. So stay tuned. So those are my thoughts today. I hope the rest of you share your thoughts again at thenexttrendpodcast.com/thoughts. But that's it for this episode. I hope you all enjoyed our conversation with Alice Robinson. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Kara. Thank you all. We'll see you next week here on The Next Turn. See you soon.